Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. I'm Charlie Herman. The midterm election is over and a new Congress will take office in January. But until then, there's still a lot of work for the current Congress to deal with, like funding the government. There's always a fight about whether or not a lame duck Congress should do much of anything until the new year. And this time is no different, but it's more complicated since Republicans will take control of both houses. Before then, however, several important programs will expire, including the Terrorism Risk Insurance Act, or TRIA, and that has a lot of the real estate community in New York worried. WNYC's Ilya Marritz joins me now. Ilya, here's this insurance program that's never been used, even once since the day it was created following 9/11. Why are people so worried that it won't be renewed?
Well, this is really a debate about the role of government and how we pay the cost of terrorist attacks. After 9/11, private insurers were alarmed and they left the market in droves. In 2002, Congress passed a law to provide a government backstop to cover most of the damages above a certain threshold. That worked. Private insurers got back into the market. But years have passed, and there are now many voices in Congress who believe the private insurance industry could and should do more, and the taxpayers should do less.
Well, this week, former Police Commissioner Ray Kelly, Congressman Peter King, and others wrote an op-ed in Politico, and they're arguing that the federal government must provide a backstop to keep cities vibrant and healthy. So I guess that means that there's some real worry.
Well, this is really on the House. The Senate has already passed a bill on a bipartisan basis, overwhelming support. But it's the reluctance of some House Republicans to get anything done that's really creating uncertainty here. I spoke with Warren Heck, chief executive officer of the Greater New York Mutual Insurance Company. They insure thousands of apartment buildings around New York City. And Heck says the company may have to cancel more than half its policies. He expected the law would have been renewed months ago.
And here we are with Congress just coming back to the Capitol, and it doesn't seem like it's moving. It doesn't seem as though there is agreement between the Senate and the House. So I'm very anxious.
So then what's the way forward from here?
Well, maybe the House and Senate will reach a last-minute compromise. They might raise the trigger for the government backstop from $100 million to $500 million. That's what some Republicans want to do. If there's no compromise in the offing, Congress could consider a temporary extension to the program as is for 6 months or maybe a year. But Democrats and others say that's a bad option because the lifespan of many construction projects is measured in years, not months. So they need longer-term insurance policies.
Ilya, thanks.
Thank you.
When you went to the polls on Election Day, you didn't just vote. You submitted a performance review of your senator or congressman. I mean, in a way, that's what voting is, right? Should they keep their job or not? While politicians get this feedback from thousands, even millions of people, many of us get evaluated on a regular basis. It's the dreaded performance review.
The traditional review is still alive and well in some places.
That's Nikki Waller.
I run the Wall Street Journal's coverage of management, careers, and the office.
If there's a lot of agreement that annual reviews don't work and people don't like writing them, people don't like giving them, people don't like getting them, and then there's the sense of it doesn't mean anything in the end, what is being done about that?
Companies are doing a lot of different things to track performance. In fact, they're more interested in tracking performance than before. And so as the annual review falls to the wayside, we're seeing a lot of different review structures. There's the peer-to-peer review that's coming up in some smaller companies. And also with technology and big data, there are a lot of vendors out there who are offering products that allow you to be reviewed on a monthly, weekly, or even daily basis.
This sounds like big data that we hear about is actually coming to the workplace.
This is what we're seeing. And the great thing that employers say is not only can they see how an individual person is doing, but they can see their workers in the aggregate. So while it's big brother-ish, there's also a lot that can be done to get a better macro sense of how the company is performing.
Are there some companies that have just scrapped doing reviews altogether?
No company can afford now to not have a way to track how its people are doing.
Nikki Waller, thank you so much.
Thanks, Charlie.
And as companies experiment with new models for feedback, maybe we, the employees, should take more control. Sheila Heen is a contributor for the Harvard Business Review and has written about how we can do that.
The latest book that we put out this year is Thanks for the Feedback, The Science and Art of Receiving Feedback Well, Even When It's Off-Base, Unfair, Poorly Delivered, and Frankly, You're Not in the Mood.
That's quite a title.
It is quite a title. It tries to capture all how conflicted we feel about feedback much of the time.
Why are we so conflicted?
You know, part of the reason that we're conflicted is that feedback itself sits really at the junction of two core human needs. On the one hand, we really do want to learn and grow. If you look at the happiness research, learning, growing, getting better at something is a big piece of what makes life fun and satisfying. It's why we take up new hobbies in retirement. The problem is that there's this second human need sitting right alongside it, which is the need to be accepted and respected and loved just the way we are now. And the very fact of feedback suggests that, well, how you are now is not quite A-okay.
Do you believe in the value of evaluations?
Well, one of the interesting things about evaluations is that it is one form of feedback. There are actually three kinds of feedback. We call it ACE, appreciation, coaching, and evaluation. And the difference between them is the purpose. Appreciation says, I see you, I get you, you matter. Coaching is aimed at helping me get better at something, and that's the real engine for learning. Evaluation is what we're talking about in these year-end reviews. Evaluation tells you where you stand, and evaluation is the loudest emotionally.
What's the advice that you give to people when they get a negative review?
So maybe number one, just understand your own wiring and profile. If you're someone who is very sensitive to feedback, cut yourself a little bit of slack. Recognize that right now it feels like there's nothing right with you, but you can come back to have a follow-up conversation. Number two, your goal, both in the original conversation and in follow-up conversations, is first to just understand the feedback, where it's coming from, and also where it's going, so that you can start to turn the evaluation into some coaching. The third is to distinguish between appreciation, coaching, and evaluation. And your rating, evaluation, is helpful, but it's actually not what's going to drive your learning. It's going out to get some coaching.
Sheila Heen is a contributor for the Harvard Business Review. To hear more about the future of the performance review, like how to ask for the right kind of coaching,
ask a very specific question. What's one thing I'm doing or failing to do that you think is getting in my way? People will tell you, here's one idea, because they've been carrying it around, wishing you would change it, by the way.
Go to our website, moneytalking.org, or subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And while you're there, give us a review. We can take it. I'm Charlie Herman, and this is Money Talking from WNYC.